King Verence opened his eyes. Water was pouring down the window of his bedroom. There was no light but that which crept in under the door, and he could just make out the shapes of his two guards, nodding in their seats. A window pane tinkled. One of the Ubervaldians went and opened the window, looked out into the wild night, found nothing of interest, and shuffled back to his seat. Everything felt very pleasant. It seemed to Verence that he was lying in a nice warm bath, which was very relaxing and comfortable. The cares of the world belonged to someone else. He bobbed like happy flotsam on the warm sea of life. He could hear very faint voices, apparently coming from somewhere below his pillow.
Vic, ja, till Helen Bischoff. Ach, was it kill? Yup. Na, ich nun well terra turro. Ja, in tan tetra. Yup, yup.
Something rustled on the floor. The chair of one man jerked up into the air and bobbed at speed to the window.
Yup.
The chair and its occupant crashed through the glass. The other guard managed to get to his feet, but something was growing in the air in front of him. To Verence, an alumnus of the Fool's Guild, it looked very much like a very tall human pyramid made up of very small acrobats.
Hup, 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 yip, yip.
It grew level with the guard's face. The single figure at the top yelled,
"What you looking at, Chimey? Ha! Are we testy?"
and launched itself directly at a point between the man's eyes. There was a little cracking noise and the man keeled over backwards.
Hup.
The living pyramid dissolved to floor level. Verence heard tiny pattering feet, and suddenly there was a small, heavily tattooed man in a blue pointy hat standing on his chin.
See you, Kingy! Awe echter Brennock, yeah?
Well done, Verence murmured. How long have you been a hallucination? Jolly good.
Can ye saggy ye spark it?
That's the way, said Verence dreamily.
Auch tan Hulweet! Hip, hip!
Verence felt himself lifted off the bed. Hundreds of little hands passed him from one to the other, and he was glided through the window and out into the void. It was a sheer wall, and he told himself dreamily he had no business drifting down it so slowly to cries of,
"Ta-ya, to me, hi-yup!"
Tiny hands caught his collar, his nightshirt, his bed socks.
"Good show," he murmured,
as he slid gently to the ground, and then, 6 inches above ground level, was carried off into the night. There was a light burning in the rain. Agnes hammered on the door, and the wet wood gave way to the slightly better vision of Hodgesarg the falconer.
"We've got to come in," she said.
"Yes, Miss Nate."
He stood back obediently as they carried Granny into the little room.
"She been hurt, miss?"
"You do know there's vampires in the castle," said Agnes.
"Yes, miss," said Hodgesarg.
His voice suggested that he'd just been told a fact, and he was waiting with polite interest to be told whether this was a good fact or a bad fact.
"They bit Granny Weatherwax. We need to let her lie down somewhere."
"There's my bed, miss."
It was small and narrow, designed for people who went to bed because they were tired.
"She might bleed on it a bit," said Agnes.
"Oh, I bleed on it all the time," said Hodgesarg cheerfully, "and on the floor. I've got any amount of bandages and ointment, if that'll be any help."
"Well, it won't do no harm," said Agnes. "Hodgesarg, you do know vampires suck people's blood, do you?"
"Yes, miss."
"They'll have to queue up behind the birds for mine, then."
"It doesn't worry you?" "Mrs. Ogg made me a huge tub of ointment, miss."
That seemed to be that. Provided they didn't touch his birds, Hodgesarg didn't much mind who ran the castle. For hundreds of years, the falconers had simply got on with the important things, like falconry, which needed a lot of training, and left the kinging to amateurs.
"She's, soaking wet," said Oates. "At least let's wrap her up in a blanket or something."
"And you'll need some rope," said Agnes.
"Rope? She'll wake up."
"You mean we ought to, tie her up? If a vampire wants to turn you into a vampire, what happens?"
Oates's hands clasped his turtle pendant for comfort as he tried to remember.
"I, think they put something in the blood," he said. "I think if they want to turn you, into a vampire, you get turned. That's all there is to it. I don't think you can fight it when it's in the blood. You can't say you don't want to join. And I don't think it's a power you can resist."
"She's good at resisting," said Agnes.
"That good?" said Oates.
One of the Uberwald people shuffled along the corridor. It stopped when it heard a sound, looked around, saw nothing that had apparently made a noise, and plodded on again. Nanny Ogg stepped out of the shadows and then beckoned Magrat to follow her.
Sorry, Nanny, it's very hard to keep a baby quiet.
Shh! There's a bit of noise coming from the kitchens. What could vampires want to cook?
It's those people they brought with them, hissed Magrat. They've been moving in new furniture. They've got to be fed, I suppose.
Yeah, like cattle. I reckon our best bet is to walk out bold as brass, said Nanny. These folk don't look like they're big on original thinking. Ready?
She absent-mindedly took a swig from the bottle she was carrying.
You just follow me. But look, what about Verence? I can't just leave him. He's my husband.
What will they do to him that you could prevent if you was here? Said Nanny. Keep the baby safe. That's the important thing. It always has been. Anyway, I told you he's got protection. I saw to that.
What, magic?
Much better than that. Now you just follow me and act snooty. You must have learned that, being a queen. Never let them even think you haven't got a right to be where you are.
She strode out into the kitchen. The shabbily dressed people there gave her a dull-eyed look, like dogs waiting to see if a whipping was in prospect. On the huge stove, in place of Mrs. Scorbick's usual array of scoured clean pots, was a large, blackened cauldron. The contents were basic grey. Nanny wouldn't have stirred it for $1,000.
"Just passing through," she said sharply. "Get on with whatever you were doing."
The heads all turned to watch them. But towards the back of the kitchen, a figure unfolded from the old armchair where Mrs. Scorbick sometimes held court, and ambled towards them.
"Oh, blast, it's one of the bloody hangers-on," said Nanny. "He's between us and the door."
"Ladies," said the vampire, bowing, "may I be of assistance?"
"We were just leaving," said Magrat haughtily.
"Possibly not," said the vampire.
"Excuse me, young man," said Nanny in her soft old biddy voice, "but where are you from?"
"Oberwald, madam."
Nanny nodded and referred to a piece of paper she'd pulled out of her pocket.
"That's nice. What part?"
"Klotz."
"Really? That's nice. Excuse me."
She turned her back, and there was a brief twanging of elastic before she turned round again, all smiles.
"I just likes to take an interest in people," she said. "Klotz, eh? What's the name of that river there? The The A?"
"The R," said the vampire.
Nanny's hand shot forward and wedged something yellow between the vampire's teeth. He grabbed her, but as she was dragged forward, she hit him on the top of the head. He fell to his knees, clutching at his mouth and trying to scream through the lemon he'd just bitten into.
"Seems an odd superstition, but there you are," said Nanny,
as he started to foam around the lips.
"You have to cut off their heads, too," said Magrat.
"Really? Well, I saw a cleaver back there."
"Shall we just go," Magrat suggested, "before someone else comes, perhaps?"
"All right. He's not a very high-up vampire, anyway," said Nanny dismissively. "He's not even wearing a very interesting waistcoat."
The night was silver with rain. Heads down, the witches dashed through the murk.
"I've got to change the baby."
"For a raincoat would be favourite," muttered Nanny.
"Now?" "It's a bit urgent."
"All right, then, in here."
They ducked into the stables. Nanny peered back into the night and shut the door quietly.
"It's very dark," whispered Magrat.
"I could always change babies by feel when I was young.
I prefer not to have to. Hey, there's a light."
The weak glow of a candle was just visible at the far end of the loose boxes. Igor was brushing the horses until they shone. His muttering kept time with the strokes of the brush. Something seemed to be on his mind.
"Filly voice, eh? Filly walk. What the hell does he know? Jumped up whippersnapper. Igor, stop this. Igor, stop that. All these kids swanning around, trying to push me around. There's a covenant in these things. The old master knew that. A servant is not a slave."
He glanced around. A piece of straw drifted to the ground. He began brushing again.
Fetch this, fetch that. Never a morsel of respect, oh no.
Igor stopped and pulled another piece of straw off his sleeve.
And another thing.
There was a creak, a rush of air, the horse reared in its stall, and Igor was borne to the ground, his head feeling as though it was caught in a vice.
Now, if I brings me knees together, said a cheerful female voice above him, it's very probable I could make your brains come right down your nose. But I know that ain't going to happen, because I'm sure we're all friends here. Say yes.
Oof.
That's the best we're going to get, I expect.
Nanny Og got up and flicked straw off her dress.
"I've been in cleaner hay lofts," she said. "Up you get, Mr. Igor, and if you're thinking of anything clever, my colleague over there is holding a pitchfork and she ain't much good at aiming, so who knows what part of you she might hit."
"Is that a baby she's carrying?"
"We're very modern," said Nanny. "We've got hedge money and everythink. And now we'll have your coach, Igor."
"Will we?" said Magrat. "Where are we going?"
"It's a wicked night. I don't want to keep the baby out, and I don't know where we'd be safe near here. Maybe we can get down onto the plains before morning."
"I won't leave Loncra."
"Save the child," said Nanny. "Make sure there's going to be a future. Besides," she mouthed something at Magrat which Igor did not catch.
"We can't be sure of that," said Magrat.
"You know the way Granny thinks," said Nanny. "She'll want us to keep the baby safe," she added loudly. "So hitch up the horses, Mr. Igor."
"Yes, mistress,"
said Igor meekly.
"Are you kicking my bucket, Igor?"
In a society that had progressed beyond the privy and the earth closet, she would have said, "pulling my chain."
"No, it's a pleasure to be commanded in a clear, firm, authoritative voice, mistress,"
said Igor, lurching over to the bridles.
"None of this would-you-mind rubbish. And Igor likes to know where he stands."
"Slightly lopsidedly," said Magrat.
"The old master used to whip me every day," said Igor proudly.
"You liked that?"
"Of course not, but it's proper. He was a gentleman whose boots I was not fit to lick clean."
"But you did, though," said Nanny.
Igor nodded.
"Every morning. Used to get a lovely shine, too."
"Well, help us out, and I'll see you flogged with a scented bootlace," said Nanny.
"Thanks all the same, but I'm leaving anyway," said Igor, tightening a strap. "I'm thick up to here with this lot. They shouldn't be doing this. They're a disgrace to the species."
Nanny wiped her face.
"I like a man who speaks his mind," she said, "and is always prepared to lend a towel. Did I say towel? I mean hand."
"Are you going to trust him?" said Magrat.
"I'm a good judge of character, me," said Nanny, "and you can always rely on a man with stitches all round his head."
"Whaley, whaley, whaley! Ta can only be twantusen! Big jobs!"
A fox peered cautiously around a tree. Through the rain-swept woods, a man was moving at speed while apparently lying down. He wore a nightcap, the bobble of which bounced on the ground. By the time the fox realized what was going on, it was too late. A small blue figure leapt out from under the rushing man and landed on its nose, smacking it between the eyes with its head.
"See ya! Grichta boons out of tis yan!"
The Nac MacFeagle leapt down as the fox collapsed, grabbed its tail with one hand, and ran after the others, punching the air triumphantly.
"Hoo boy! We can eat tonight!"
They pulled the bed out into the middle of the room. Now Agnes and Oates sat on either side of it, listening to the distant sounds of Hodgesarg feeding the birds. There was the rattle of tins, and the occasional yelp, as he tried to remove a bird from his nose.
"Sorry," said Agnes.
"Pardon?"
"I thought you whispered something," said Agnes.
"I was, saying a short prayer," said Oates.
"Will that help?" said Agnes.
It helps me. The prophet Bruther said that Om helps those who help, one another."
"And does he?"
"To be honest, there are a number of opinions of what was meant."
"How many?"
"About, 160, since the schism of 10:30 a.m. February the 23rd. That was when the reunited Free Chelonianists, Hubwood's convocation, schismed from the reunited Free Chelonianists, Rimwood's convocation. It was rather serious."
"Blood spilled," said Agnes.
She wasn't really interested, but it took her mind off whatever might be waking up in a minute.
"No, but there were fisticuffs, and a deacon had ink spilled on him."
"I can see that was pretty bad.
There was some serious pulling of beards as well."
"Gosh!"
"Sects maniacs," said Perdita.
"You're making fun of me," said Oates solemnly.
"Well, it does sound a little, trivial. You're always arguing. The prophet Bruther said, 'Let there be 10,000 voices,'" said the priest. "Sometimes I think he meant that it was better to argue amongst ourselves, than go out putting unbelievers to fire and the sword. It's all very complicated," he sighed. "There are 100 pathways to Om, Unfortunately, I sometimes think someone left a rake lying across a lot of them. The vampire was right. We've lost the fire.
But you used to burn people with it.
I know, I know.
Agnes saw a movement out of the corner of her eye. Steam was rising from under the blanket they'd pulled over Granny Weatherwax. As Agnes looked down, Granny's eyes sprang open and swiveled from side to side. Her mouth moved once or twice.
"And how are you, Miss, Weatherwax?" said Mightily Oates in a cheerful voice.
"She was bitten by a vampire. What sort of question is that?" Agnes hissed.
"One that's better than what are you?"
Oates whispered.
Granny's hands twitched. She opened her mouth again, arched her body against the rope, and then slumped back against the pillow. Agnes touched her forehead and drew her hand back sharply.
"She's burning up. Hodgesarg, bring some water."
"Coming, miss."
"Oh, no,"
whispered Oates. He pointed to the ropes. They were unknotting themselves, stealthily moving across one another like snakes. Granny half-rolled, half-fell out of the bed, landing on her hands and knees. Agnes went to pick her up and received a blow from an elbow that sent her across the room. The old witch dragged the door open and crawled out into the rain. She paused, panting, as the drops hit her. Agnes swore that some of them sizzled. Granny's hands slipped. She landed in the mud and struggled to push herself upright. Blue-green light spilled out from the mew's open door. Agnes looked back inside. Hodgesarg was staring at a jam jar in which a point of white light was surrounded by a pale blue flame that stretched well beyond the jar and curled and pulsed.
"What's that?"
Outside, Oates had pulled Granny upright and had got his shoulder under one of her arms.
"She said something," he said. "I am, I think."
"She might be a vampire."
"She just said it again. Didn't you hear?"
Agnes moved closer, and Granny's limp hand was suddenly gripping her shoulder. She could feel the heat of it through her sodden dress, and made out the word in the hiss of the rain.
"Iron?" said Oates. "Did she say iron?" "There's the castle forge next door," said Agnes. "Let's get her in there."
The forge was dark and cold, its fire only lit when there was work to be done. They pulled Granny inside, and she slipped out of their grip and landed on hands and knees on the flagstones.
"But iron's no good against vampires, is it?" said Agnes. "I've never heard of people using iron."
Granny made a noise somewhere between a snort and a growl. She pulled herself across the floor, leaving a trail of mud until she reached the anvil. It was simply a great long lump of iron to accommodate the half-skilled metal bashing occasionally needed to keep the castle running. Still kneeling, Granny grabbed at it with both hands and laid her forehead against it.
"Granny, what can—"
Agnes began.
"Go where the others are," Granny Weatherwax croaked. "It'll need 3 witches if this goes wrong. You'll have to face something terrible."
"What terrible thing?"
"Me. Do it now."
Agnes backed away. On the black iron by Granny's fingers, little flecks of rust were spitting and jumping.
"I'd better go. Keep an eye on her."
"But, what if—"
Granny flung her head back, her eyes screwed shut.
"Get away!"
she screamed. Agnes went white.
"You heard what she said," she shouted and ran out into the rain.
Granny's head slumped forward against the iron again. Around her fingers, red sparks danced on the metal.
"Mr. Priest," she said in a hoarse whisper, "somewhere in this place is an axe. Fetch it here."
Oates looked around desperately. There was an axe, a small double-headed one, lying by a grindstone.
I've found one," he ventured.
Granny's head jerked back. Her teeth were gritted, but she managed to say,
"Sharpen it."
Oates glanced at the grindstone and licked his lips nervously.
"Sharpen it right now, I said."
He pulled off his jacket, rolled up his sleeves, took up the axe, and put a foot on the wheel's treadle. Sparks leapt off the blade as the wheel spun.
"Then find some wood and cut a point on it, and find a hammer."
The hammer was easy. There was a rack of tools by the wheel. A few seconds' desperate rummaging in the debris by the wall produced a fence post.
"Madam, what are you wanting me to—"
"Something will get up presently,"
Granny panted.
"Make sure you know well what it is."
"But you're not expecting me to behead—"
"I'm commanding you, religious man.
What do you really believe? What did you think it was all about? Singing songs? Sooner or later, it's all down to the blood.
Her head lolled against the anvil. Oates looked at her hands again. Around them, the iron was black, but just a little way from her fingers, there was a faint glow to the metal, and the rust still sizzled. He touched the anvil gingerly, then pulled his hand away and sucked at his fingers.
"Mistress Weatherwax's a bit poorly, is she?" said Hodges Arg, coming in.
"I think you could certainly say that, yes."
"Oh, dear. Want some tea?"
"What?"
"It's a nasty night. If we're stopping up, I'll put the kettle on."
"Do you realise, man, that she might get up from there, a bloodthirsty vampire?"
"Oh!"
The falconer looked down at the still figure and the smoking anvil.
"Good idea to face her with a cup of tea inside you, then," he said.
"Do you, understand what's going on here?"
Hodges Arg took another slow look at the scene.
"No," he said.
"In that case, it's not my job to understand this sort of thing," said the falconer.
"I wasn't trained. Probably takes a lot of training understanding this. That's your job.
And her job.
Can you understand what's going on when a bird's been trained and'll make a kill and still come back to the wrist?"
"Well, no."
"There you are, then, so that's all right. Cup of tea, was it?"
Oates gave up.
"Yes, please. Thank you."
Hodges Arg bustled off. The priest sat down. If the truth were known, he wasn't sure he understood what was happening. The old woman had been burning up and in pain, and now the iron was getting hot as if the pain and the heat had been moved away. Could anyone do that? Well, of course the prophets could, he told himself, conscientiously. But that was because Om had given them the power. But by all accounts, the old woman didn't believe in anything. She was very still now. The others had talked about her as though she was some great magician, but the figure he'd seen in the hall had just been a tired, worn-out old woman. He'd seen people down in the hospice in Abi Dayal, stiff and withdrawn until the pain was too great, and all they had left was a prayer, and then not even that. That seemed to be where she was now. She was really still. Oates had only seen stillness like that when movement was no longer an option. Up the airy mountain and down the rushy glen ran the Nacmac Feagle, who seemed to have no concept of stealth. Progress was a little slower now because some of the party broke away occasionally to have a fight amongst themselves, or an impromptu hunt, and in addition to the King of Lancre there was now, bobbing through the heather, the fox, a stunned stag, a wild boar, and a weasel who'd been suspected of looking at a Nacmac Feagle in a funny way. Verrant saw, muzzily, that they were heading for a bank at the edge of a field, long deserted and overgrown, topped with some ancient thorn trees. The pixies stopped with a jolt when the king's head was a few inches away from a large rabbit hole.
"Dunna fit it? Yeah, shove it, just shove it, yes."
Verrance's head was banged hopefully against the wet soil once or twice.
"Hackish lugs away."
"Big jobs."
One of the pixies shook his head.
"Canna doot cane. Ilse yould, carlin, he or guts for garters."
Unusually, the Nacmac Feagle fell silent for a moment. Then one of them said,
"No one's got that much guts right to know. And beside, she'll give us a scubricum as well. We oath it. Ye canna cross a hag."
"How do you know then?"
Verrance was dropped on the ground. There was a brief sound of digging, and mud showered over him. Then he was picked up again and carried through a much enlarged hole, his nose brushing tree roots in the ceiling. Behind him, there was the sound of a tunnel being rapidly filled in. Then there was just a bank where rabbits obviously lived, topped with thorn trees. Unseen in the wild night, the occasional wisp of smoke drifted among the trunks. Agnes leaned against the castle wall, which was streaming with water, and fought for breath. Granny hadn't just told her to go away. The command had hit her brain like a bucket of ice. Even Perdita had felt it. There was no question of not obeying. Where would Nanny have gone? Agnes felt a pressing desire to be near her. Nanny Og radiated a perpetual field of it'll be all rightness. If they'd got out through the kitchens, she could be anywhere. She heard the coach rattle out through the arch that led to the stables. It was just a looming shape shrouded in spray from the rain as it bounced across the cobbles of the courtyard. A figure by the driver, holding a sack over its head against the wind and rain, might have been Nanny. It hardly mattered. No one would have seen Agnes running through the puddles and waving. She trooped back to the arch as the coach disappeared down the hill. Well, they had been trying to get away, hadn't they? And stealing a vampire's coach had a certain Nanny Ogg style. Someone gripped both her arms from behind. Instinctively, she tried to thrust back with her elbows. It was like trying to move against rock.
"Why, Miss Agnes Knit," said Vlad coldly. "A pleasant stroll to take in a little rain?"
"They've got away from you," she snapped.
"You think so? Father could send that coach right into the gorge in a moment if he wanted to," said the vampire. "But he won't. We much prefer the personal touch."
"The in-your-neck approach," said Agnes.
"Ha-ha, yes. But he really is trying to be reasonable, so I can't persuade you to become one of us, Agnes?"
"What, someone who lives by taking life from other people?"
"We don't usually go as far as that anymore," said Vlad, dragging her forward. "And when we do, well, we make sure that we only kill people who deserve to die."
"Oh, well, that's all right then, isn't it?" said Agnes. "I'm sure I trust a vampire's judgment."
"My sister can be a bit too rigorous at times, I admit."
"I've seen the people you brought with you. They practically moo."
"Oh, them, the domestics. Well, it's not much different from the lives they would have had in any case. Better, in fact. They are well-fed, sheltered, milked. And is that bad?"
Agnes tried to twist out of his grip. Just here there was no castle wall. There hadn't been any need. Lankra Gorge was all the wall anyone could need, and Vlad was walking her right to the sheer drop.
"What a stupid thing to say," she said.
"Is it? I understand you've travelled, Agnes," said Vlad, as she struggled. "So you'll know that so many people lead little lives, always under the whip of some king or ruler or master, who won't hesitate to sacrifice them in battle or turn them out when they can't work anymore."
"But they can run away," Perdita prompted.
"But they can run away? Really? On foot? With a family? And no money? Mostly they never even try. Most people put up with most things, Agnes."
"That's the most unpleasant, cynical, accurate," Perdita said. "Accurate? No."
Vlad raised his eyebrows.
"You have such a strange mind, Agnes. Of course, you are not one of the cattle. I expect that no witch is. You people tend to know your own mind."
He gave her a toothy grin, and on a vampire this was not pleasant.
"I wish I did. Come along."
There was no resisting the pull, unless she wanted to be dragged along the ground.
"Father's very impressed with you witches," he said over his shoulder. "He says we should make you all vampires. He says you're halfway there anyway. But I'd much rather you came to see how marvellous it could be."
"You would you? I'd like to be constantly craving blood."
"You constantly crave chocolate, don't you?"
"How dare you?"
"Blood tends to be low in carbohydrates. Your body will adapt. The pounds will just drop away."
"That's sickening."
"You'll have complete control over yourself."
"I'm not listening."
"All it takes is a little prick."
"It's not going to be yours, mister."
"Ho, ho, ho, wonderful," said Vlad,
and dragging Agnes behind him, he leapt into the Lankra Gorge.
Granny Weatherwax opened her eyes. At least, she had to assume they were open. She'd felt the lids move. Darkness lay in front of her. It was velvet black, starless, a hole in space. But there was light behind her. She was standing with her back to the light. She could sense it, see it on her hands. It was streaming past, outlining the darkness that was the long, rich, deep shadow of her on the black sand. It crunched under her boots as she shifted her weight. This was a test. Everything was a test. Everything was a competition. Life put them in front of you every day. You watched yourself all the time. You had to make choices. You never got told which ones were right. Oh, some of the priests said you got given marks afterwards. But what was the point of that? She wished her mind was working faster. She couldn't think properly. Her head felt full of fog. This wasn't a real place. No, that wasn't the right way of thinking about it. It wasn't a usual place. It might be more real than Lankra. Across it, her shadow stretched, waiting. She glanced up at the tall, silent figure beside her.
Good evening.
Now, you again.
Another choice, Esmeralda Weatherwax?
Light and dark? It's never as simple as that, you know, even for you.
Death sighed. Not even for me.
Granny tried to line up her thoughts. Which light and which dark? She hadn't been prepared for this. This didn't feel right. This wasn't the fight she had expected. Whose light, whose mind was this? Silly question. She was always her. Never lose your grip on that. So, light behind her, darkness in front. She'd always said witches stood between the light and the dark.
Am I dying?
Yes.
Will I die?
Yes.
Granny thought this over.
But from your point of view, everyone is dying and everyone will die, right?
Yes.
So you aren't actually being a lot of help, strictly speaking.
I'm sorry. I thought you wanted the truth. Perhaps you were expecting jelly and ice cream?
Heh!
Thank you.